This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The Veterans Administration is looking into whether employees at Durham's VA Medical Center falsified appointment records. This week, two employees of the Durham VA were put on administrative leave as part of that investigation. The VA is probing similar allegations at medical centers across the country. Leaked emails and whistleblowers from VA offices in Arizona and Wyoming suggest employees were changing records to show that veterans were getting prompt appointments when, in fact, they were not. Martha Quillen is a reporter covering the story for the News and Observer and joins me now. Hello, Martha.
Hello.
Let's start with the idea of improper scheduling. What does that mean? What's at the heart of this investigation?
Well, this stems from the VA's policy or goal of trying to schedule patients within 14 days of what the VA calls their desired date. So if they call and ask for an appointment, the goal is, or the clerk will ask them when they want to be seen, and they give a date, and the clerk tries to schedule them within 14 days of that appointment. And the issue is whether that's happening or if they are somehow manipulating the records to indicate that it's happening so that the VA looks better under these reviews.
And according to the investigations, how would they or how might they be manipulating these if these allegations are true?
There are a lot of ways they could be manipulating it, and some of them are very subtle. One way is just by manipulating what is called the desired date. So if you tell the patient who's calling trying to get the appointment that you don't have an appointment within 14 days of the date that they ask, you say, well, I have an appointment maybe at the end of July. And the person says, well, then I'll take that one. Well, now you can write that down as their desired date and put that appointment down, and they're on the schedule, and it looks like you're meeting the goal. Other ways that have been alleged are much more nefarious, and they include these allegations of something called secret lists and sort of off-the-books record-keeping systems where people are scheduled for appointments far down the road. They're on the books somewhere, but they're not obvious to auditors, so that it looks like they're meeting these goals of the 14 days, but in fact they're not.
How did these alleged practices come to light?
These have been brought forward from whistleblowers, essentially. The first ones came forward recently out of Phoenix. Now, there have been allegations of all kinds of problems that the Inspector General within the VA has found for several years, but recently there have been these complaints that started with a retired doctor from the VA in Phoenix, and since then other employees have come forward at facilities across the country, and I believe the count is up to 10 is what I heard this morning, that it may have happened or that there are claims of it having happened in facilities in 10 states.
And what do we know about the investigation in Durham and perhaps elsewhere in North Carolina?
Durham at this point is the only one where we know that the VA has taken any action, which was to put two employees on administrative leave. I understand they're on leave with pay while the VA looks into what happened. And the allegations are that two employees, sometime between 2009 and 2012, did something on the scheduling that was outside of the VA policy of putting people on appointment schedules within 14 days of that desired date. We don't know exactly how they are alleged to have violated the policy. I'm told that it was not a Phoenix scenario where there was this sort of secret record-keeping system. It may have been something as simple as telling people the truth, which was, we can't get you in within 2 weeks. We may get you in within 6 weeks or 2 months.
All right. Now, these allegations have become highly political, of course. Senate Republicans are calling for VA Secretary Eric Shinseki to step down. He says he won't. He's testified on Capitol Hill. In fact, he's testifying today on Capitol Hill. And he has said that he has the backing of the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Martin Dempsey. He was asked in North Carolina, Dempsey was asked recently whether he publicly supports Shinseki, and here's what he had to say.
He's tackling it with integrity and transparency and energy, and we'll see. I know there's a series of investigations ongoing now, but I have confidence that if anybody can help us make this enterprise, really, that kind of flows from DOD to Veterans Affairs, better, it's him, and I hope he's given the chance to do it.
Now, this flow that he's talking about is between the Department of Defense and the VA, and of course, part of that is transferring records after a member of the military is discharged and becomes a veteran. which is an issue at the Winston-Salem VA, where there's a backlog of claims, very large. In fact, as you recall, it threatened to collapse the floor. So let's talk about the backlog now, and where does that stand these days?
Well, my understanding is that by last fall, they had cut that about in half. They had to throw a lot of resources at that. And as you say, it was almost a physical problem. They were being almost literally buried under paper records. And what they did to try and reduce the backlog was bring in people to transfer paper records to electronic records, which was a lot of data entry into computers. And what that allowed them to do, of course, was to clear the physical space of all of these records that were piling up around them and inhibiting their ability to do their jobs. But it also made it so that a veteran could access their records from anywhere, so that their record within the VA was portable rather than having to have these paper records literally sent through the mail, which is an incredibly antiquated system. It also will eventually allow the DOD to transfer records directly to the VA, so those records will travel electronically, and theoretically there would be no loss, and you would not have to create a whole new record system when you get over to the VA. I don't believe that transition has been completed yet.
But it's in progress right now, so is the floor still buckling in Winston-Salem?
No, I think they have taken care of that problem, but they still have some backlog to dig through. And, of course, that's a different backlog. People may not realize if they're not veterans, they may not realize that what happens in Winston-Salem is the processing of disability claims, benefits claims and disability claims, that kinds of thing. So it's benefit processing rather than medical treatment. The medical treatment goes on at the clinics and the hospitals, and so there's the problem of people not getting care, which some people perceive as a backlog, and then there's the problem of not getting your claim processed for months and months or possibly years, and that's a benefits claim backlog.
Talking with Martha Quillen, who's a reporter for the News and Observer, covers veterans affairs, among other things. And since we're talking about veterans, let's talk about education. Martha, Governor McCrory's budget calls for veterans to get in-state tuition for community colleges, similar to a bill that stalled in the General Assembly during the last session. Tell us about that, the governor's proposal.
That's one of two proposals, actually, that Governor McCrory has made regarding education access to veterans in North Carolina. The other involves four-year colleges. The community college proposal would provide in-state tuition levels to soldiers once they leave active duty. The way it's set up now, if you are from out of state, you come to North Carolina to serve at one of our bases here. While you're on active duty, you're allowed in-state tuition at community colleges. We have 58 in the system. And then once you get out of active duty, for that first year, even if you remain in North Carolina, for that first year, you're not considered a resident. You would not get that in-state tuition level. So this would provide that immediately after people leave active duty. And that would cost the state about $1.8 million to provide that service.
And you're talking about, and that's for community colleges, and there's also a proposal for four-year colleges?
That's right. For four-year colleges, and there's some provisos, but generally what they would provide there is sort of a stipend. I believe they call it a scholarship that would make up the difference between in-state tuition and out-of-state tuition charges for that first year.
And as you said, similar legislation tried to make its way through the legislature, didn't get all the way through. Has it changed much? Do we know how much support these measures have?
Last check, there were 22 sponsors of that bill on the community colleges, so it looks to me like it has pretty good support, and it's not a terribly expensive enterprise that they're talking about.
Yeah, you said, what, $1 million?
$1.8 million.
$1.8 million. So education obviously is one of the barriers for veterans trying to get jobs after their service. What are some of the other barriers these days?
Well, the jobs, I believe, are the biggest thing. You know, the military and its veterans are a microcosm of society, and everybody is, a lot of people are struggling now. You've heard a lot about unemployment among veterans, and the greatest problem there has been among the younger group of veterans, those who have served in Iraq and Afghanistan, who may have gone into the service right out of high school or part of the way through college, and when they come out, their work experience all consists of their military work, and they don't always know how that can be transferred to civilian, well, to private sector jobs, and the private sector doesn't always know how those skills can transfer. So there's a great effort to help those folks understand what it is that they already know how to do that the rest of the world can make good use of.
When you talk about an effort, where is that effort, and how do veterans access that kind of help to communicate their skills to the work with the workplace?
There have been a great number of programs. Federal, state, and local efforts have been aimed at helping those folks. There are job banks online. There are preferences given to veterans when they apply for jobs at the federal level. There's the Department of Labor has an online program that is specifically designed to help veterans figure out what exactly they know that the private sector can use. So, you know, maybe they were trained as a medic or a mechanic, and that's easily transferable, and anybody can see what they could do with that. But maybe they have some other skill. Maybe they worked in logistics, and this questionnaire online thing would maybe look for keywords, and it would help them understand that if they worked in logistics, they might make a good warehouseman, or maybe they could do quality control. There also are programs at some of our, at the county level, there are training programs that people can go into. They can get resume writing help.
Hey, if you did logistics, you could be a wedding planner.
Sure.
Martha, good to talk with you. Thanks for joining us. Martha Quillen's a reporter for The News and Observer. Just ahead, debut novel Randy Davenport from Chapel Hill dives into her own family history as an inspiration for this novel, and we'll talk about it on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.